Headlines at 6 o'clock GMT. Suspected Muslim rebels in the southern Philippines have beheaded two of the six hostages they seized earlier in the week. The British charity Oxfam has accused the European Union of preaching free trade but practicing protectionism by excluding sugar imports from developing countries. And US officials say a guilty plea by a former Enron executive is the first step towards bringing to justice those responsible for widespread fraud within the giant energy corporation. Also in the programme, the controversial German filmmaker Leni Riefenstahl, who documented the rise of Hitler and the Nazis in the 1930s, is 100 years old today. All to come from the BBC in London. And beginning with the details of the top stories.
BBC News with Roy Lama. Suspected Muslim rebels in the southern Philippines have beheaded two of the six hostages they abducted on Tuesday. A military officer said the severed heads of two male victims were found on the island of Jolo. The kidnappers are believed to be members of Abu Sayyaf, a group of armed Muslims whom the United States regards as terrorists and whose main occupation is kidnapping for ransom. General Eduardo Porit Asacion of the Philippines Army says the authorities are now trying to find and rescue the remaining hostages.
The armed forces of the Philippine Army are now conducting search and rescue operations using the air assets and ground force. We are already going there, yeah, where they ran and probably hid themselves there. But the air assets are now trying to look at the pinpoint the area while our ground troops are pursuing them.
Officials originally said the hostages were traders selling cosmetics door-to-door, but later said that the captives belonged to the Jehovah's Witnesses sect. The British development charity Oxfam has accused the European Union of operating policies in the sugar trade that unfairly exclude farmers in developing countries from European markets. In a new report, it calls the system a scam and says it's an example of Europe's hypocrisy in dealing with the underdeveloped world. Mark Doyle reports.
According to Oxfam, European consumers are unwittingly subsidising their sugar producers by $1.5 billion a year through high supermarket prices, while third world farmers who produce relatively cheap sugar are excluded from the EU market by a high tariff barrier. The charity said European sugar farmers and processors were vested interests benefiting from hidden EU subsidies. The European Union and two major European sugar producers contacted by the BBC declined to comment publicly on the Oxfam report. But an industry source, requesting anonymity, said more access to European markets was being negotiated for farmers from the developing world.
The authorities in Colombia say at least 26 holidaymakers were kidnapped by rebels in the northwest of the country. Police blamed the left-wing National Liberation Army, or ELN, for the abduction, which took place at a popular fishing spot on the Pacific coast. Reports from the region say a large group of tourists traveling on a bus through the Utria National Park were stopped by heavily armed men in military uniforms and forced to march into the jungle. Peasant leaders in Guatemala say more than 20,000 people have been protesting across the country over land reform. Demonstrators staged marches and set up roadblocks on the country's main routes to protest against lack of progress in getting greater access to land. The Minister for Agrarian Affairs said the government would increase the funds used to buy land for redistribution among farmers, but he warned that the process could only be gradual. You're listening to the news from the BBC. The American financial regulator says that a guilty plea by a former Enron executive is the first step in bringing to justice those involved in the fraud which led to the energy giant's collapse. Michael Copper is the first person to plead guilty to fraud and money laundering charges following Enron's collapse. Stephen Cutler of the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission said Mr. Copper's testimony would help to convict others.
The action against Mr. Copper is an important chapter in the story of Enron's collapse, but much of the story remains untold. This case is but a first step, albeit a vital one, in our effort to hold responsible and to bring to justice those who participated in this massive betrayal of the investing public's trust.
Mr. Copper has agreed to give back $12 million, which the U.S. Justice Department says will be used to compensate those who were defrauded. Investors in Enron lost billions of dollars after its failure. Several hundred Bosnian football supporters have clashed with riot police at the end of a match between their national team and Yugoslavia, the first since the end of the Bosnian War in 1995. There were several arrests and a number of injuries as police kept the Bosnian fans away from the Yugoslav supporters, who were housed in a separate stand in the Olympic Stadium in Sarajevo. Nearly a million people in China are said to be battling to stop a lake in southern Hunan province overflowing and inundating surrounding cities and farmland. Torrential rain in recent weeks has raised water levels on Dongting Lake to almost 2.5 meters above the danger level. BBC News.
6 minutes past six GMT. You're listening to World Briefing from the BBC with Ian Purden. The Philippine Army has now launched a ground and air offensive on suspected Muslim rebel positions on the southern Philippines island of Jolo. The authorities say members of the Abu Sayyaf group seized six people travelling in a jeep in a remote part of the area on Tuesday. Two hostages have now been beheaded. The kidnapping was the first on the island since American troops began working with the Philippine military to hunt down the Abu Sayyaf group. The US has linked the group to the Al-Qaeda network. From Manila, John McClain reports.
A military officer said the severed head of one of the hostages had been found near the army headquarters on the southern Philippine island of Jolo, a predominantly Muslim area. The head of another hostage was found in a public market. Both victims were male. A note attached to one of the severed heads said, "Those who do not believe in Allah will suffer the same fate." The dead men were among six Filipinos, including four women, whom officials said had been abducted on Jolo on Tuesday by the Abu Sayyaf. The Abu Sayyaf are a group of a few dozen armed Filipino Muslims whose main occupation is kidnapping for ransom. The United States regards them as terrorists because they once had links with Osama bin Laden. Officials originally said the hostages were engaged in the door-to-door selling of cosmetics. Later, officials added that the hostages were Christians, Jehovah's Witnesses to be precise. The theory is that they could have been attempting to preach Christianity using the selling of cosmetics as a pretext.
John McClain in the Philippines. Two Indonesian demonstrators have gone on trial on charges of insulting the president under a law that has not been used since the resignation of President Suharto 4 years ago. The two men were arrested for trampling on pictures of President Megawati Sukarnoputri and the vice president Hamza Has and pouring rotten food on the photos during an anti-government protest. If convicted of the criminal offence of insulting the president, the two defendants face a maximum of 6 years in prison. Police in Japan say crimes linked to the internet dating services have more than doubled in the first 6 months of this year. They say almost 800 crimes were reported in which victims were contacted through online dating sites. More than 70% of the offences involved sex with teenage girls. The American Deputy Secretary of State, Richard Armitage, is visiting Sri Lanka to support the government's peace initiative with Tamil Tiger rebels. Mr. Armitage, on a tour of Asia, will visit the northern Jaffna Peninsula, the heart of the two-decade-long conflict. And as Francis Harrison reports from Colombo, Mr. Armitage's decision to visit Jaffna is being viewed in the south of the island as a warning that the U.S. will not accept the rebels' separatist claims.
Mr. Armitage comes to Sri Lanka at a pivotal time. The government and Tamil Tiger rebels have just agreed to hold face-to-face talks in Thailand in mid-September. The Tigers, who are banned as terrorists in the United States, are to be deproscribed in Sri Lanka next month in advance of peace talks. And a ceasefire has meant 100,000 internal refugees have gone home this year. And for the first time in more than a decade, civilians have freedom of movement in the north and east of the island. Mr. Armitage will see for himself some of the dramatic changes in Jaffna. He'll visit the checkpoint leading to rebel territory, itself the front line until just a few months ago, and watch US-backed deminers at work. The Deputy Secretary of State is also expected to meet the Catholic Bishop of Jaffna and a group of prominent intellectuals, as well as army officers. The visit of such a high-level American official to Sri Lanka is being viewed as an endorsement of the current peace process, which many feel offers the best hope in years of resolving the conflict. Sri Lankan politicians say the post-September the 11th scenario has helped them, creating an international environment which is more conducive to their efforts to end the war. Key to this is the sense that the United States is closely watching what is going on in Sri Lanka. Over recent months, American officials have been commenting on ceasefire violations and urging the Tigers to abandon armed struggle. But the Sri Lankan government will also be pressing for more financial support for the peace process, arguing that reconstruction of the conflict areas will give the Tamil minority a stake in peace.
Francis Harrison in Colombo. You're listening to World Briefing from the BBC in London. A reminder of the main news: suspected Muslim rebels on the southern Philippine island of Jolo have beheaded two of the six hostages they seized earlier in the week. The British charity Oxfam has accused the European Union of preaching free trade but practicing protectionism by excluding sugar imports from developing countries. A report by Oxfam criticised what it calls the devastating impact on poor countries of subsidised overproduction resulting from the European Common Agricultural Policy. Oxfam accuses European sugar companies of dumping the surplus produced by its policies at unrealistically low prices on the world market. Risto Vilonen, Secretary-General of the Committee of Professional Agriculturers in Europe, rejects this, saying the EU is trying to help African, Caribbean and Pacific countries.
They say that we are 40% of world exports. That's not true. We are between 12-17%, and we must see that we import from ACP countries quite a lot of sugar to Europe just to help developing countries. And we have organized our sugar regime in such a way that the former colonies are in very favorable position to export sugar to Europe.
But in Africa, sugar producers say the EU policy is unfair. Vish Supersad is a spokesman for the South African Sugar Association.
Principally, we understood Europe to be a net importer of sugar 20 years ago. As a result of CAP, the Common Agricultural Policy Program, Europe has become a net exporter of sugar, and it is putting something like 5 million tons of sugar onto the world market, which has a significant effect on the price of world sugar. South Africa produces 2.5 million tons of sugar. Over half of that sugar is sold on the world market. And part of our problem is that the depressed world market price impact on our industry.
Vish Supersad said there's still scope for the EU to re-examine its sugar regime so that it can give South Africa and other developing countries greater access to the European market. British farmers are launching a campaign today aimed at stopping illegal meat imports, which they say could cause a fresh outbreak of the livestock disease foot and mouth. International travellers will be given postcards at three main British airports in an effort to raise awareness of the threats imported food can bring. Richard Wells has this report.
The National Farmers Union says the British government isn't doing enough to stamp out illegal imports of meat. The postcards will invite air travellers to tell them how much they're aware of the risks posed and the extent of publicity and physical searching they were exposed to at ports of entry. The Farmers Union believes the replies will expose major failings and force the government to take tougher action. The Department of Environment, Food and Rural Affairs is putting two sniffer dogs into Heathrow Airport to help find illicit meat brought from abroad. But John Taylor of the Farmers Union says it's inadequate. Australia, he says, has 80 dogs at its airports. A smoked monkey carcass was recently seized from a Eurostar train at Waterloo Railway Station in London, so successes are taking place. But farmers say a much greater effort is needed to reduce the risk of a future outbreak of foot and mouth and the consequent destruction of thousands of British livestock.
Richard Wells. The biggest international conference on sustainable development since the Rio Summit opens in Johannesburg in South Africa next week. Many world leaders will attend. Since the Rio Summit 10 years ago, much lip service has been paid to sustainable development. But how well are the goals being lived up to? In Brazil, over the last year, prosecutors have been uncovering a massive corruption scandal involving a government development agency for the Amazon. Some $2 billion is alleged to have been siphoned off from the agency, which has now been closed. closed down. As Tom Gibb reports, the scandal makes a mockery of the laws and regulations designed to protect the world's largest rainforest.
Since the Trans-Amazon Highway cut through the heart of the Amazon basin in the 1970s, the pattern of development has been the same. First came the loggers, opening up side roads to extract wood. Then large areas of land were sold off to create big farms and ranches. During the last 30 years, these have received the lion's share of the billions of dollars of development money spent by the government's Amazon Development Agency, SUDAM. In recent years, projects were supposed to be environmentally friendly, but the reality, say federal prosecutors like Ubaratan Gasseta, has been very different.
Alguns projetos na Sudan, eles tinham um componente ambiental que...
Many of the Sudan projects had environmental clauses, but like everything else, these were not complied with. Large amounts of government money was granted to agricultural projects in areas still covered by forest, which was then destroyed.
Sudan has now been closed down because so much of the money was found to have been siphoned off. It's become one of Brazil's biggest corruption scandals. The other half of the development policy has been to encourage migration of peasant farmers to the Amazon by offering small plots of land. The idea was to bring cheap labour to the region. But these people get no government help and often cut down and sell their trees for a pittance. In the town of Anapu, in the heart of the Amazon basin, a group of settlers have set up a small plant to make banana flour. It's a sustainable project, says coordinator Rosiano Juzo, to combine agriculture with forest management.
There are lots of examples around here of Sudan money that was stolen, but projects to help ordinary people cannot get government financing. Many people have moved here from the northeast of Brazil, where there has been complete deforestation. They have seen the effects of these with the droughts and are very worried about it. The aim of this project is to increase family incomes so that people do not need to cut down their trees and to encourage reforestation.
Brazil is now in the middle of an election campaign, with all the candidates promising to bring development to the Amazon. But no one's being very clear what kind of development that'll be.
Tom Gibb reporting from Brazil. Senior ministers from 18 African states are meeting today in Libya to discuss regional issues and security. The meeting of the Community of Sahel Saharan States, known as COMESA, will gather for its eighth meeting since the group's founding by the Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi. The controversial German filmmaker and photographer Leni Riefenstahl is 100 today. To mark the occasion, she's releasing her first new film in almost 50 years. It's an underwater film, which she shot herself during dives in the Indian Ocean over the past 25 years. But it'll be for her work in the 1930s, which critics say glorified Adolf Hitler and the Nazis, that she'll always be remembered. Chris Morris in Berlin looks back on Leni Riefenstahl's career.
Indelible images of the dark side of 20th century history. Torchlit Nazi parades, giant swastikas, Adolf Hitler in his prime. In the 1930s, Leni Riefenstahl produced films of technical and artistic genius. But her critics say she glorified Hitler and helped legitimize the Nazis in Germany. Two pieces of work in particular made her famous. Triumph of the Will, about the Nazis' Nuremberg rally, and Olympia, a mesmerizing record of the 1936 Berlin Olympics. Leni Riefenstahl denies that she was ever a member of the Nazi Party herself, but she's never shaken off the association. Speaking in a recent BBC interview, she said she'd been misunderstood.
I could have not foreseen at the time how things would turn out. It has become a real misery for me after the war. I had to suffer and I still do. Of course, I would be much happier today if I had not done it.
In the post-war period, she was twice cleared by tribunals of any wrongdoing, but her film career came to a sudden halt. Whether by design or default, she'd been one of Hitler's most effective propagandists. But at the age of 100, she still insists it was art. And she has no intention of apologising.
Chris Morris in Berlin. The main news again. Suspected Muslim rebels in the southern Philippines have beheaded two of the six hostages they seized earlier in the week. And the British charity Oxfam has accused the European Union of preaching free trade but practicing protectionism by excluding sugar imports from developing countries.